search. Each man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno.
Welcome, BBC Ears, to episode number 144 of the Broken by Concept podcast, the number one informational and educational podcast. My name is Nathan Mott. I teach jungle in League of Legends, and this is Coach Curtis. First name Coach, last name Kirsch. Curtis. Last name Curtis, and he figures out how to win mid lane in League of Legends. Curtis, we've got a new little
addition.
What's it called? A little item to our inventory. We recently went to the Australian GP, Curtis.
The F1.
F1. Go Max Verstappen, go Red Bull.
So Nathan joined the
officially
the bandwagon and got himself a little cap here.
A $90 cap, yeah, by the way.
Unbelievably expensive.
It's my merch. Donation to the sport.
Great weekend. We went together. We saw Red Bull get another victory. So if you're into F1, screw Ferrari and all the other organizations, yeah. Red Bull all the way.
This is a hardcore Red Bull fan podcast.
That's
and
right.
If Red Bull want to sponsor us with like one of those mini fridge or something like that, we're always open to.
That's right. And if Max Verstappen wants to come on
podcast, yeah, talk about some high performance.
Teach him a thing or two.
Do a coaching session with Max Verstappen. We're very open
get
to
into
the suggestion.
Details.
All right, Curtis. Today we're going to have our theme, our topic. This is something that you've mentioned a lot over the podcast episodes, you know, the stage 1, 2, 3, 4 model that you're using your coach in.
We see these questions all the time, right? What the hell is the stage? What is the stage 3, 4, 2, 1? What is it?
So we felt like we needed an episode.
And you didn't even really know what it was.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of like, I knew the bottom of the pyramid, but the top of the pyramid, I was sort of a little bit iffy on. So we're going to break this down. It's a pyramid. It's a pyramid.
Okay. So
theme.
I want to give a bit of background where this started. Okay, so I actually created this. I think it was around the beta of it. The starting point of it was probably maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. Like I could start to get ideas. And essentially what I was aiming to do was create a framework to categorize mistakes. Okay? And so initially it was actually stage 1, stage 2, stage 3. There was no stage 4. About a year in, I realized it was an incomplete model and I added the stage 4. Now, when I made this, I actually didn't have a visual representation of this. So we made it a pyramid, which actually makes sense. I love pyramids. I love pyramid schemes. I love everything about them. That's not true. But it makes sense to be a pyramid because stage 4 is the base. That's the most important thing. And that's the thing that needs to be always covered first before you work your way up
the top of the pyramid.
Up the pyramid to the top of the pyramid scheme.
Exact same as John Wooden over there. That's another
right.
pyramid to go over. We've got so many pyramids here.
We love
pyramid
pyramids.
Of success.
We need a pyramid here then. We've got to get a little pyramid there.
Maybe we can like, we'll create like a model of this and we can just like pop it there.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So what's this actually called, Curtis?
I actually haven't given it a name. I just call it the stage 1, 2, 3, 4, stage 1 to 4 model.
Let's just steal John Wooden's, just call it the Pyramid of Success.
We can't steal that.
No, it's not.
Trademark that.
It's like the Pyramid of Issues in League of Legends, the different types of issues.
The
different types of problems.
Well, you know, I mean, at the end of the day here, I got to trademark it with Curtis's Pyramid of Coaching or something. Like it's got to have, because people are going to steal this, Nathan. I'm happy to call it the BBC pyramid.
The BBC pyramid.
I'm happy to call it that.
Okay.
And then that way, if people refer to it,
sure,
then we get some free marketing there, right?
Yep.
Okay. So we're going to start with the bottom of the pyramid.
Break it down, because this
stage
is what
four.
A lot of people were asking about this. Like, okay, what actually?
What is the stage?
Clear
four?
Definitions and examples.
Okay.
So we'll start with stage four, Curtis.
Stage four is essentially out of game problems, right? A lot of things are looped in stage four. We're talking relationship with the game, being tilted from previous blocks, comparing yourself to friends. These are basically problems that influence you or prevent you from expressing your best self.
There's no point getting further into the details until these things are first addressed.
That's correct.
These are really big picture problems. As simple as sleep. You sleep 3 hours a night. Why? How can I expect to be playing good League of Legends? I can't. I'm not even going to be playing at my level that I could be playing at.
yeah, why would we look at your micro or your in-game decision-making when you are dwelling on the past block that you played that day? Or like you said, we're on 3 hours sleep. What's the point? There's no point. There is a core underlying out-of-game issue that needs to be addressed. So the reason, where this actually came together was I was sick of getting into the details and then ending the review with something like, oh yeah, we should have ended the review, sorry, at like 15 minutes instead of going 40 minutes in and being like, oh yeah, I guess I was just tilted.
That's right.
You know, it's like...
The big one around stage four is what the most common thing is, just you're absolutely tilted.
Checked out.
Why are we even bothering getting into the review here?
What's the point? Because if you play this exact game tomorrow with a clear mind, you're not going to make these mistakes. So what's the point? Why are we overemphasizing these mistakes if you're not going to make the same mistakes if you're playing with high intensity? Right? It was kind of out of frustration more than anything. I was like, guys, we got to address these stage four issues first.
This is where I will find, let's say, new people that come into Soul 2, and I sort of start to see that the way they're talking about the game and stuff like that, and then I realize that, oh, okay, they're just on that, they're at the beginning of the journey. They're just really toxic players. Like, at the end of the day, they're going to be blaming their teammates for everything. Like, subconsciously, that's in there. It's even sometimes as well, sometimes not as obvious. I need to sometimes dig, and I find that even maybe in the second or third review I do with them, is that, okay, at the end of the day, they genuinely do believe that their teammates are holding back. Even that they sort of get what we're sort of talking about.
Yep.
They know it's not good, but it's really ingrained in their subconscious.
So stage four issues can actually manifest in many ways.
Yes.
Right? And because this can be quite a theoretical topic, I've actually got an example. So this was today, right? Now, I've got very, very good at identifying stage four issues in-game, in a review. So this was, we're going to bring up a clip here. I'm going to try my best. It's actually a very simple clip. So even if you're listening, you don't even need to look at the clip. It's very simple. Review this morning with WorstF. He's one of my EU master clients. I was looking, he brought in an Akali VOD this morning. And so he's playing Akali into Echo. Should play this clip out. Essentially, his jungler, his Jarvan, comes to gank this Echo with him. He tries to kill the Echo. And he lands his E onto the Echo. And the Echo flashes out. And he chases with Flash and doesn't get the kill. So, you know, we talk a lot about small wins or even big wins, right? He just blew the flash. The Jarvan came by, blew the flash of this Echo, right? And all he had to do was go back to the mid wave, take the flash advantage, chill. You're playing Akali into Echo, relax, all's good. We're killing it. And when he flashed and chased this with no energy, he didn't even have energy to queue after anyway, it automatically rung alarm bells, because as a master tier player, especially with this client, I know him well, this is a very uncharacteristic mistake, and it rung alarm bells. So now, when I heard this, I'm like, I'm going to do some investigating here. So one of the red flags when I'm in my coaching sessions is, do I think that this is an uncharacteristic mistake, or not a mistake I would expect this client to make? Now, when that happens, I now do some digging. So then I get into the details with him. I say, all right, what do you make of this and stuff? And he says, yeah, I just felt like, I feel like kind of pressured to like make something happen in the early game. And, right, my initial hypothesis, because sometimes I spitball, and I say, all right, what resonates with you here? We actually mentioned this on last week's episode with Necklace about the Aurelia. Remember the Aurelia player who had mid-game team fighting issues? And because his team fighting wasn't good, he felt pressured to have to get really far ahead in the early game to compensate for his poor mid-game team fighting. So my first hypothesis was like, all right, man, do you think that this has something to do with you? You feel like you need to get something done in the early game because your mid-game team fighting was bad? Because I actually connected the dots. When he came into the coaching session, I actually asked him, I said, why this VOD? And what are you struggling with? And he said, oh, I typically struggle with mid-game. I feel like my mid-game's not good. And so I connected the dots there. I'm like, oh, he said he doesn't have a good mid-game. And then I saw this play. I'm like, oh, interesting. So that was my initial hypothesis. But then he tells me some stuff and I get into the details. And he's like, yeah, what the truth was, what we ended up getting to, is that he has a really complex champion pool with way too many champions. Has a champ pool of five, but they're not just five simple champs. He has Yone, LeBlanc, Akali, and then like two other champs. I'm like, and he doesn't even have really that much mastery on Akali. And then we get to the bottom of it. He's like, yeah, I'm really stressed because I'm not getting enough games on all these champs. They're too complex. And then that's it.
That's the stage four.
This is an example of a stage four. He's stressed and jacked up mentally and overwhelmed mentally because he feels pressured to get shit done early because he doesn't have the confidence on his champion because he's lacking champ mastery. And he's playing too many champions and he's stretched because his champ pool's too wide. So there's no point even getting into this review because he's overwhelmed. Like his mental state, he's like literally his mindset heading into the game is completely jacked up.
So the definition of our stage four is these are outer game affecting
big picture outer game stuff.
So the big picture there is the way he views champ pool. Sort of, is this relationship with the game in a way?
Yeah, like I would say...
Maybe he thinks he's like his identity as a player.
And what it really is he has no confidence.
Yeah.
Why does he have no confidence? Because he stretched his champ pool massively. And so back in the day, I would go through this review and we'll get into the details. But no, there's no point because he has no confidence on his champion because his champ pool is completely stretched and his relationship with the game right now is really poor because of that. Mm-hmm. I said, we got to remove some champs. You've got to really have a think about your champ pool. Then once you've actually decided to commit to a few competitions, we can get into the details. But I'm not going to piss around and waste my time here if you're going to drop Akali in 2 days from now. Right? Mm. So there's no point. Mm. And so I said, okay, if you want to go down the Akali route, let's remove the LeBlanc, let's remove the Yone, and let's just focus on Akali. Because champ mastery matters a shit ton, especially in Master Plus. So that's it. And I ended the review here. I literally ended the review here. There's no point going further on. This is a great example of what a stage four, how a stage four can manifest. So when you're as a coach, I feel like when you see those very questionable, like this doesn't make sense. When you see those plays that don't make sense, this is a very overly basic mistake. Typically, there's some investigation you've got to do
peel
there.
Back the layers.
Yeah, and sometimes no. Sometimes it really is just like, oh, yeah, I'm learning Akali, and that's it, and I'm happy with my champ pool, and that's okay. We'll continue to go into the VOD then and get into the details. But it's worth investigation at the minimum. Does that kind of clear
yep,
that
one? Yep, I think it's a great example. Another thing I wrote down here as well is that... not making peace with your past blocks.
Yep.
So let's say, I guess this sort of ties into confidence as well. Let's say you've gone 2-0-3 blocks. They weren't very clear why you lost. You maybe didn't properly review them. Maybe you haven't moved on from them yet. Maybe you, again, the seeping in the subconscious, like, okay, it's just my teammate's fault. Like, we're not actually figuring that out. So that's going to, again, hurt confidence and... it's going to affect, again, it's going to be hard to get into, there's no point getting into the details if we're just, again, tilted. You're just tilted.
That's right. No point moving on.
All right, so we're moving to stage three now.
So we move up the pyramid scheme here to stage three.
Three.
Okay.
And the way we've defined this is more how to think as your champion.
So this is...
champion identity stuff.
This is, okay, so now, so we've covered the outer game related stuff. Now we're moving into like your mindset in game and how your mindset is shaped by your role assessment in a game, your win con assessment, and your perception of your champion's identity, right? So this is kind of how you're thinking in a game.
It's big picture thinking in game.
Yeah, so we've covered big picture thinking out of game. Now it's big picture thinking in game. So classic examples of this, you know, if I'm playing Syndra, I talk a lot about the valuing your life mindset. I'm valuing my life. I'm trying to stay alive. That's a mindset. It's a frame of reference. I'm protecting myself at all times, not blowing my flash. It's like a mindset which influences my behavior.
Yep.
Right? If you're playing Rek'Sai, you identify that your bot lane is your win con. That's going to shape your behavior.
Would you say these are more like the general things? It's like I generally, what with my champions, like, okay, with Rek'Sai, I want to level 3 gang, get lanes ahead generally.
Yeah.
You know? But obviously, we're going to get yes. into specific, moving up the pyramid, we'll get into
that's
more.
Right.
We might need to adapt that.
You get
that.
More and more specific as you climb up the pyramid.
So these are the general things. And this is, I'd say that the community in general is pretty good at giving stage three advice.
Yeah.
Would you agree on like Reddit and all that sort of stuff?
Actually, I would actually say the other way around, actually. Yeah. I would actually say people are very good at giving stage two advice, which we'll get to in a second. I think people completely don't understand stage three. I think stage three is actually, in my opinion, the most important stage and the least understood in League of Legends.
So you think people just really don't understand the champ identity?
People don't get mindset and how way of thinking shapes your behavior.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
like, I see like that. Reddit yes. analysts yeah. don't get how mindset shapes behavior. They just look at the independent decisions. They don't get how you would come to that conclusion. And it's a feeling of like, you know, like that's why I talk about use analogies and metaphors to get across a mindset. I feel like State Street is the most pragmatic in my opinion, because it's people who main a champ. And when you get into the details of a mindset, how you're feeling with a champion, that's where stage three really comes into play in my opinion. It's like a feeling, it's a mindset, it's a way of thinking. So I think, yeah, Reddit is actually, and you in the general league community is terrible at stage three, personally.
Because so there's a way to think. I guess reference points, people don't really talk too much about that.
No, reference points are a really key part of the game in terms of consistency. What are you looking, what boxes are you looking to tick?
I've recently just finished my Wukong section for my Soul to Academy, and the key reference points for Wukong is like a guy talking about him as a mid-game team fight champion. Huge reference point, get level 6. Your reference point yes. is doing your full combo,
playing off your ultimate cooldown. Playing off your cooldown.
If you don't have ultimate up, hit your camps.
So these are like ways to shape your behavior, right?
And they're so important to have, because even though you might know these, it's so easy to get distracted in a game of League of Legends as well. Like the stage three, I feel, really brings it back to when the game gets confusing, you can bring it back to your reference points and the game actually makes more sense.
League is a game. You know, we ages ago, I mentioned the, remember we mentioned the Dreyfus model of learning? And one of the key parts of that learning model of learning was having like established rules and then breaking the rules. In League is a game on a champ-by-champ basis where each champ has kind of these set of rules, and then case-by-case basis, you break these rules to kind of see why those rules exist. Like with Yone, like getting your to Berserker Grease, playing off your Bork Spike, playing off your R, and like there's like these key things that exist for a reason. Now, that doesn't mean you have to stick to them really, really strictly, but they're there for a reason. You've got to understand why those are very important. And so, yeah, what I love about reference points in a game of League of Legends is that it establishes a sense of order, and it establishes some sense of control in a very chaotic game.
Yes.
It's like, if I don't know what to think, okay, bring it back to my reference points. I don't know what the fuck is going on, but okay, what did Nathan say about Wukong? Play off my R cooldown, but boom, boom, boom. And you have that way of thinking. You can bring some semblance of control and consistency back to your gameplay. So that's what stage three is all about. Those reference points, wink, your assessment of your role and your composition, all that beautiful stuff.
Would this also be as well how to in generally use like your abilities? Like how do you want to be using Syndra E and stuff? Or is this more stage two?
Yeah, I mean, look, yeah. Yeah, there is an element of that. Like, how should you, at a big picture level, be using, thinking about your E? Thinking about at your ability at a high level.
Let's say as well, you're an assassin. It's like, okay, in general, you don't really want to be using your entire combo on a tank.
Yeah, like, again, yeah. It's kind of like you
want to be focusing on squishy champs.
Your mindset with your ability usage, I guess, and having like an understanding of what's the underlying purpose of that ability. That's right.
And this is also as well, win conditions. This is when you tab at the beginning of the screen, thinking about in general, who on my team is good into the enemy team, who are some key prime targets for me to be killing in
fights.
And
as the game goes on, looking who's fed, who's weak, who do you want to roughly be playing around, who do you probably not want to be playing around, that sort of thing.
All right, so yeah, I think there's a lot in stage three.
Yes, that's a big one.
I think that's a huge part. You know, thinking about my reviews and stuff, I think I focus a lot on stage three problems. Because yeah, it's actually, especially my gold and, you know, platinum players who, yeah, they need better ways to think about how to play their champion and get really into champ identity.
So you can tell when people have stage three issues very quickly when they make decisions that don't make sense in reference to their champ identity.
Yeah.
So if you're seeing watching a mage player, watching a Syndra or a Victor, whatever, and I see like a Victor or a Syndra flash aggressively and try to kill the backline. I've literally seen this in some of my reviews. Syndra try and flash forward in a team fight to try and one shot the enemy AD carry when they could have easily just played front to back. Literally, I got someone, this is without exaggeration, I gave this Syndra player, I think it was Victor or Syndra, one of them in the MLS, a bit of advice about just don't flash forward. And focus on valuing your life and sit front to back and play front to back fights. And that alone kind of got him insane results. That's just one thing, that reference point of how to think about your champ. So if I see a Syndra flash forward past the front line into the back line and trade one for one, I already know that's not a micro decision. That's not even a macro thing. That is a stage three. That is a reference point. That person doesn't understand the champ's identity, what their role is, and how to be perceiving their champion at a high level, right? But again, that can also be stage four. It can be, right? They're jacked up, they're stressed, they're whatever, and they know they shouldn't be doing that, but they do it anyway because of all that other bullshit. Yep,
they've got some narratives they're building up again. Going to this example here, they think they have to win the game, early game and stuff.
That a common one actually we didn't cover in stage four was actually feeling like you have to be the carry.
Yeah.
Right? The carry mindset.
This is relationship with the game.
That's relationship with the game, yep. That's spot on.
Ranked anxiety is another one that we didn't
mention
as well. Ranked
anxiety, stage four. Yep, big time stage four. So we've covered stage four. We've covered stage three. We're going to move on to stage two.
So this is now moving to the more your inner game. This is the decision making.
Right? So let's say a way for you guys to perceive stage two is, okay, so let's say you're in a game. You've got a great relationship with the game. You're playing with intensity.
You know your champ identity. You know your reference points.
Yeah, you know your win condition. You know your role in the game. You know exactly how you need to be thinking. Then it comes to it like a situation on the map, and it's like, okay, should I recall and help my mid laner here, or recall and dive bot or something? It's like you're weighing up between your options. It's like your decision making and macro, a lot of macro stuff involved there.
Trade
as well.
In objectives, go into a fight or concede in a fight.
Yep, that's another one. It's a lot of it just actual raw decision making, because someone might be very clear about what they need to do. They just don't know what the right course of action, what the right path to victory is. And usually stage two is just gaps in knowledge. They don't have enough experience. They don't really know what to do.
I think this is a big experience one.
I would say this is massive in jungle.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Like they know what they need to do, but they don't know how to win the game.
Yeah. There's a lot of certain like specific jungle tracking or certain sequence of events that will happen that there's just always a default response as a jungler. It's like, okay, I know the enemy jungler is pathing towards top. It's like 5-6 minutes in the game. I can quickly do a dragon right here in this moment.
Yep.
So these are like, again, bigger. I'd sort of say this is decision making, but maybe like more, this is the macro decision making.
Major macro decision. That's right. Typically stage two, it's a good problem to have. It's actually a very good problem to have because it's easy to fix.
Yes.
Stage two problems are very easy to fix. It's like, all right, this is what you did. This would be a better course of action, and this is why. Great, you don't know what you don't know, move on.
So I had here written here in terms of team fighting, like diving backline and stuff like that.
Yeah, so...
So how does team fighting skirmishing fit into stage two?
Okay, so again, this is where we've got to be careful as a coach. So team fighting, it can be many things.
It can be stage three.
Our job as a coach is to identify what is the mistake.
Yeah.
How would you categorize it? And that's why you've got to ask them and got to be very vigilant, right? So let's say you're playing Galio. Galio is a great example for this because Galio is very flexible. I can actually dive with maybe my jungler, or I can actually sit on my AD carry and peel. I had a game of Galio yesterday where there were some fights I nearly lost for my team because I didn't know what the correct course of action was until after the game. I'm like, oh, this fight, I actually should have just not peeled my jungler or whatever, and actually just sat on my Jinx and pressed W when the Akali jumps in. So that's a stage two. I didn't know what the correct way to approach the team for was. I knew what my identity was, but I just didn't know which one was the best choice. The team fighting, it can be a stage three. They don't know their role. They don't know the win condition. It can be stage four. They're jacked up. And again, they're not focused. They're playing with low intensity, whatever. And it can be that. And it can be stage two. It can even be stage one, which we'll touch on in a second as well.
Another example we love to use, we've used this example so many times, is the dope of Fizz.
Mm.
Where, guys, what do we all think Fizz is his champion? Fizz is, in everyone's mind, going to stage three, but Fizz is... assassinate squishies, dive the backline, one-shot people. But we talk about, there's been many examples when we see in his gameplay, he plays peel Fizz. He's using his E defensively, peeling with damage for his carries, which again is the complete sort of opposite of identity, but these are more the decision-making stage two sort of stuff in terms of how do I play my champion in this specific game?
Yep.
Same with me for Rek'Sai. Sometimes I play peel Rek'Sai. Again, my mindset is like, I'm just going to peel the Darius that's running to my my AD carry, and I'm just going to one-shot them, and then we've killed that person so quickly we can still win the fight, even though I use all my cooldowns on that person.
Yeah, I would say there's a lot of just specifics in stage two. That's where a lot of macro stuff and a lot of just decision-making.
Yep. So I'm in stage two again. There's lots of stuff in there.
Lots of stuff in review sessions.
And now stage one now, Curtis.
Top of the pyramid.
Top of the pyramid. So this is even further than he does. These are just pure micro executions. Boring stuff, guys. Skill shots, clicking close to your character, good movement. A great example here is about, okay, a dive. Mm-hmm. Doing a dive. You fuck up the turret.
Let's go from stage four to one with a dive, right? So stage four, again, playing with intensity, not made peace with previous blocks, had plenty of sleep, playing in three blocks, all that, boom. Stage three, aware of win condition, rolling comp, all that big stuff.
It could be a bad dive in just in general. The dive doesn't make sense.
Right, yeah. But then stage two is the play is good. The dive is good. It makes sense, right? So we're moving down the pyramid here to stage two. It's in accordance to win conditions, all that. So stage three is all ticked. Stage two, it is the correct play, right? The jungle shot on the other side of the map. It's the highest value play. There's no counterplay from anyone. And then stage one, the execution, you don't wait for the Nautilus to go in and tank the tower first. You go in, take the tower shot. Or you didn't wait for the wave to crash. Or you miss your knock up on Rek'Sai or whatever the hell it might be. It's like a mechanical execution aspect of the game. So that's again, yeah, all that stuff. Missed flashes, missed abilities, missed timed abilities, all that stuff.
These are like, I think that when you tick all the stages, you know, as you said, you went up the pyramid there, stage four, stage three, you know, you know, that stage two is the right move. There's no counterplay, and then stage one, and you misplay it. That's great end of review moments. Would you agree? Because the game's so like that is the correct sequence of events.
Correct sequence.
It's not really important to review anymore because the game's so different.
Yeah, right. If failing a dive and getting double killed, and then they trade sides of the map and they get rift, they kill top. Yeah, the game's like screwed a lot of the time. Yeah,
a very common. I mean, yeah, I think this is more prevalent in as a jungler again. Like, let's say if I am playing Elise, right? I had a game yesterday. I played an Elise jungle with a Draven Thresh bot lane against a Sonar Jinx. And it all went good. But if we fail that initial dive, like there's
James completely
really
different.
Not really. Because that dive should be 100% guaranteed. Think about all the tools we have. Elise, E, Repel, Thresh. We got all our flashes up. They're going to play the wave well. So yeah, then that's just because the game's unrealistic at that point.
People really struggle with stage one. Even though it's the most simple, like on paper, people really struggle with it and they're not satisfied when they review a stage one.
Yeah,
mistake.
They're not, no.
Because it's not satisfying,
it's so
is
boring.
It?
It's that's like, why I said, oh, I said it's boring.
I got hit by that ability because we win this 2v2, you know? I just got hit by the ability and it's like, is that it? Is that really it? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not sexy,
it's
is
not
it?
Sexy. It's not like some macro thing.
It's like anyone. Picture. Anyone can see that mistake.
And I think you got to, guys, you got to learn to be okay with this. That's League of Legends.
It's the reality.
League's
dude.
A game of execution, right? Yes. And at the end of the day, at the end of the day, people aren't satisfied with it. Sometimes, and what I say, guys, I'm like, guys, you know, as you get more games in and you develop more champ mastery and you get more confident, competent with the game, you will make less and less stage one mistakes.
Yeah.
It just comes with time and anticipation. Because let's say, okay, let's talk tower dives for a second, right? If you were to main Elise, you would do a lot of tower dives.
Yep.
Right? But when you first start learning Elise, especially if you've played other champ, like maybe champs like Shyvana or whatever it might be, or whatever, you might not be comfortable with dives. Dives maybe aren't part of your arsenal. So now when you're going to Elise at the start, you're probably just unfamiliar with a lot of the situations and dive situations. You don't really know how to approach it. But then you fail 10, 15, 20 dives. You will get very good at it because you'll just be knowing what to look for. The execution will get a lot better. And that's just, you've got to get those reps in. That's what League is a game of getting reps in.
This is where we talk a lot about in terms of the disrespect for the execution of the game.
Is your mic loud enough, by the way?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The execution of... This is where the disrespect for the execution of the game is. Like, you know, like it's very easy for... let's say at the beginning they miss... Let's say you're playing Nautilus and I miss the first three hooks of the game, you know? You could easily go later in the game and say, oh, well... you know, my Addy carry sort of sucks or in, you know, whatever. But like at the end of the day, let's bring it back. You're missing the first three hooks. I guess that actually does come down the list because, you know, stage three, like in general with Nautilus, I mean, we're a very strong early game champion. We want to be taking control of the game, getting really good lane phase. If I had opportunities to get good hooks and I'm missing them, you know, we're pretty, it's pretty end of review level sort of stuff. And again, that's where people can, they gloss over their failed skill shots and get really lazy sometimes as well.
So
let's say for Ari, like, you know, you went through last year your phase of missing charms all the time. It's like, okay, guys.
This is what it is, missing charms. I don't want to over-review it here.
No.
You know, so where I want to kind of finalize this whole BBC pyramid thing is at the end of the day, when you're using this yourself, start with the stage four stuff. Right? Start with a stage four. Work your way up the pyramid to, okay, yep, stage four, tick all that, get to stage three. Okay, was I aware of my reference points? Do I know the win condition, my role in the comp? Okay, boom, tick that. Then move, okay, does the decision make sense from a macro perspective? Is it the correct play? And then move your way up to stage one of the end, right? Now, sometimes it will be obviously a stage one and you don't really need to work your way through the pyramid, and you'll get very efficient at this over time as you learn more about yourself. So, you know, at the start, people really struggle with applying this. And again, look, some people might really resonate with this framework. Some people may not. But I just want to, I think it was important we address this because we do talk a lot about this in our future episode, in a lot of our episodes. So that's that really, that's the pyramid.
There you go. So I guess we'll keep evolving on this over time.
Yeah, I'm sure there might be a stage five at some point. Who knows? Don't know.
And I think that we're pretty happy with those definitions and that sort of stuff. So
yeah, for now.
Let us know if we need more clarification. But again, I wanted us to address this topic because I had some conversation in Salty saying like, what are actually these stages and stuff? And let's break it down, the pyramid.
So I want to cover a very interesting thing, Nathan. So we love player psychology.
Yep.
We love player psychology and breaking down player psychology. And I had a situation, I think it was last week, in one of my solo queue games. And I felt like I played pretty well. But it was a really hard game. And I was versing you in a solo queue game. And
I was playing support, by the way.
And to give a bit of context, I blind picked Ari Mitt. I got counterpicked by Lissandra. And pretty tough matchup for Ari. I was versing a Lissandra Jarvan, which is pretty nasty as a mid jungle, especially in the early game. So I had to give a lot of pressure. And in this game, we'll get into the clips in a second, but essentially it was a really hard game for me. I'm getting shoved in, not really much I can do. I'm not getting much pressure. And I had a jungle Rek'Sai. And my Rek'Sai tried to make plays around the map and make these like invades and side lane kills, ganks or whatever. And he was constantly getting roamed on by the Lissandra. And to the point where he was like really angry at me in game. Like he started flaming me, so I just muted him. And then after the game, he added me. And typically I'm just gonna ignore this. But I'm like, you know what? As a scientist of the game, as a professor of the game, I'm gonna accept this and see what he has to say. And what we're gonna do, we're actually gonna go through We're going to show the clips and we're going to actually show the chat logs of this.
Yeah, this is the important part because the psychology of the player is really important.
And I think there's a lot of great themes here we're going to tie back and we'll really get into the details here. So I'm going to whip up this clip now. And for those of you who are listening, I will commentate the major things. It's really straightforward clips anyway. You don't need it to be too. The details don't really matter that much. So this first little section here, as you can see, I'm playing Ari into Lissandra, getting shoved in. My Rek'Sai just got a gank off onto the enemy Riven top, killed the enemy Riven. So I'm chilling, responding to a wave mid. Waves kind of coming into my tower. I'm about to kind of catch a wave under my tower. And the Rek'Sai goes for an invade. Now, I've actually got like the side lane mid bush warded. So I'm going to freeze frame right here. So in this situation, I see Lissandra basing on a ward right now. Like, but he's right on the edge of the ward. So then I'm thinking, all right, he's just recalling. And so what happens is my attention gets focused now to the minions. I'm like, hey, he's committing to the recall. I think I even look up a few times. And then what happens, because he's been recalling for quite a few seconds, he disappears. So in my mind, I thought that the recall went through. You know when someone's on the edge of the ward and then they disappear? Like, especially if the time was long, you kind of lose track of the time. So it looked like the Lissandra recalled here. And then what happens, Rek'Sai gets collapsed on because he was going for an invade. And the Lissandra is able to move to this play. And my jungler dies, gets collapsed on. So you see there, my jungler just dies to the Riventop, actually, but the Lissandra helps set it up. So now I'm going to fast forward to the next play. So now we are 7 minutes in the game. Me and Lissandra both have ultimates. And again, I'm getting shoved in by this Lissandra. I can't really contest Pryo into a Lissandra Jarvan at this point. So here, I get shoved in by the Lissandra. As soon as Lissandra moves out of vision, I instantly ping down the river. Danger, danger, danger. To topside, because I thought here that Lissandra was roaming topside to maybe help influence the top matchup. Instantaneously ping. So everyone now knows that Lissandra's moving up. And in this situation, Rek'Sai, my jungler, tries to, like, I don't know, 2v2 or go for a kill. Or
it's going for a gank.
Going for a gank on topside. Lissandra's obviously there, pinged it out. And now and the game's really quite hard right now because both sides are losing. And then he dies to Lissandra again. So at this point, he's really mad, right? He's been killed essentially twice. And I try to compensate on the back end by trying to make something happen because the Riven was really low and because the game's really desperate. So I thought I'd go for a desperate play with the Gragas. Turns into an elongated fight. Me and Lissandra trade ult for ult. And we both burn ults and flashes. So that's the second play.
Yep, and right now it's 8 minutes in the game where Curtis's team's got 2 kills. My team has 10 kills and he's down 4,000 gold.
We're down 4,000 gold. So now the game is really hard. And so Rek'Sai, in his desperate attempt to try and salvage the game, goes for a lane gank bot at the 9-minute mark. Me and Lissandra both still have no ultimates. At this point, I have basically nothing. No flash, no ult, nothing. I'm still getting shoved in now, obviously, by the Lissandra, given she's 2-0. Right, I can't really do much at this stage. Everyone's losing. Top's losing. Bot's losing. Game's really screwed. And essentially here, I do the exact same thing, pinging Lissandra's path beautifully down the river. We even see the Lissandra. And I can't follow down the river because I don't know. I mean, I have no flash. And I have no ult.
She could easily turn on you.
She can turn on me and kill me. I'm really vulnerable right now. So I decide to shove mid and not roam instead. And then it turns into an elongated skirmish on the bot side. Lissandra cleans up and that's that. Okay. So that's the context of 3 or 4 major moments in the game. And now what we're going to do is we're going to pull up the chat logs of this discussion.
This is the most interesting part, guys.
This is the interesting part. So I'm going to go ahead. We'll put this on the screen for those of you who are watching, but I'll go ahead and read it. Okay, so he added me after the game. This is what he said. Because, remember, he was like spam pinging and in the post-game lobby just abusing me. I muted him halfway through the game. And then he says, why not roam? You do nothing mid question mark. And then I say, the first thing I say is 320. I say a timestamp, 320. And then he says, low CS, look at your damage. You're a mid carry. I said, go to 320 on the VOD.
All right, hold on. Let's not get to that part, Curtis. Like, this is so... If you think about it, the first initial reaction, he added Curtis to say
he's angry. He's getting ready to abuse me, essentially, flame me.
Why did you not roam? Why are you a useless mid laner? You do no CS. You have no damage. You're mid carry, man. Like, what? So he's thinking big picture. This is what a mid laner is meant to do, okay, with me as Rek'Sai.
Yep.
And this is just so important. Again, this is sort of going into, he's sort of looking at stage 3 here. Like, if we want to back to use our model, like, there's a stage. Maybe. These are the ways that he views, he's the reference points.
Yeah, you've got an Ahri. Why is Ahri not roaming?
Ahri should be roaming. Ahri's like a roam champ, really good roam champ, skirmishing champ. So these are the instant things, his first things. And then now the great thing, what you do, Curtis, is okay, now we're moving up. Let's get into the specific decisions. Get into the details. Because what we need to solve here, what Curtis is really, as a scientist, as a student of the game, trying to understand, okay, Rek'Sai, tell me what opportunities I missed.
I was actually genuinely curious as well. Because when I exited this game, I went straight into the review. Because I just wanted to know, is there anything I could have done, right?
Yep.
So I'm like going through the VOD. I've already kind of looked at a few things. And I just say 320. So 320 was his first invade where he got collapsed on by the Lissandra. And then he keeps going on. Then I said 720, go to 720. And I'm like saying the timestamps, exactly the key moments in the game. And he says, okay. And then I say, Lissandra counters Ahri. How can I play for Pryo early? So then he responds by saying, now we're starting to get into the details. He says, Can you ping at 320? I see you recall. So his English is not that good. I think he's Korean. And I said, look at the minimap. It looks like he recalled. He's on the edge of... So this was, to be honest, I could have done this a little bit better. And I'll say later on, I say I could have done things better. He's on the edge of the ward. I recalled when he recalled. And I thought he recalled. And if you actually look at the clip, I could do this better. My momentum was a little bit overwhelmed. But I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I could have pinged that one better, 100%. And I'll show that later. And then he goes 720. If you come, because now he's looking at the VOD as well. 720. If you come, we easy 3v2. Yep. Why you come so late all game? And then I say, well, how can I come? 720. I can't come. How? I can't follow him into no vision. Then he says, why can Lissandra come? And I say, well, he gets shoved. It's a counter matchup. There's nothing confusing here. It's just basics of the game. Then he says, when you see Lissandra come bot, you farm mid when you have R. And I said, no, I have no R. At 9-10, I tried to help you on the top play before. I can't follow. He's already fed off you. He gets mega prio. You've died twice. I pinged it as well. You messed up by dying early. It's not complicated. Then he's angry now. He's in all caps. No, when Liss roam bot, we 3v3. If you come, we kill all. And I said, look, I can't follow Lissandra into the river at 9-10. I have no R. And then this is where the truth comes out. He says, well, I can't do anything all game when Liss roams. That was his key frustration point, was that he's playing Rek'Sai. He wants to gank, but Lissandra keeps having move off mid, right? And then this is when I, because again, so what we're trying to do is I'm trying to help him understand why the game played out the way it did.
And the snowball aspect of the game.
And just really getting into the details. Why did Ken Lissandra get moved and why are these things happening? And he says, and then I said, well, sides lost. Both the side lanes lost. Top and bot lost when they had counterpick. That's why we lost. I got counterpicked in draft. I blind picked Ahri. I got counterpicked. Bot and top had counterpick. And then he says, so we lost. And I said, when bot dies at 2:30, the game's messed up because they got counterpicked, top got counterpicked, both lost. I blind pick mid, sides lose. You have no options. You need to have a winning side and you made a mistake early. So it's GG. And then he says, but I gang top, but top just die. And I said, yep, it's just unlucky. When everyone knows top, and he says, I think you can do better. And then I said, yeah, sure. I can actually ping at that 320, 10 mark better. I agree. But after that, I think I played pretty well. And then nothing can do when Rek'Sai, nobody helps Rek'Sai. And why I love this is that he came in with a preconception about how he thought the game should have played out. And getting into the details, like, oh, yeah, it actually, you can see it kind of clicked for him and it kind of made sense.
He sort of even said at the end, it's like, so we just lose. It's like, yep.
Yep, we just lose.
End of review. You die there, end of review. I mean, yeah, again, Curtis made an honest mistake, I guess, by not thinking Lissandra roam, but like, that's the reality of the game. There's no point getting angry or anything about what happens later in the game because
mistakes.
This is the end review point there.
And this is where, as well, by the way, when I look at this, he's a Rek'Sai main and. You can tell he hasn't fully mastered the champ because when you play Rek'Sai and you're in this game, these are the games where you actually can't force plays. This is the game where you have to play scaling Rek'Sai. You have no mid shove. You have to, if Lissandra's roaming everywhere, you can't do anything about that.
You have to be very creative. I mean, again, it's not even that statement of Lissandra roaming everywhere. Lissandra's going to have to base. You actually might get priority.
Or be on wave at some point. You can't just randomly get there.
There's going to be very specific windows you're going to have to find. These are the hardest Rek'Sai games.
It's a hard Rek'Sai game, for sure.
But he's playing Rek'Sai like this every game. And he's just thinking, okay, well, why is my mid lane not moving and stuff like that? And not realizing this is just one of those really hard games.
And he's probably the Rek'Sai player that he's good at getting ganks. And when he gets those early ganks, he can snowball. But when the game gets hard and he can't get those early ganks off, he shits the bed. But that's that next level of champ mastery. What happens when I can't do that strategy? That's why strategies don't work. Like, you can't have this baseline strategy bullshit mindset. League is a game of specifics, right? You're faced with a dilemma. Okay, your strategy doesn't work. So you can either keep doing your strategy, slam your face into the keyboard, lose, and get angry, or adapt, right? So I just thought this was a really interesting, again, case study. And guys, it's a lesson for all of us. We all get frustrated. I'm not blaming him for getting frustrated. I understand why he's frustrated. Game was frustrating.
It's for a him. Frustrating game, man.
Very frustrating, very hard game of League of Legends. But, you know, the goal and the end point we need to strive for is you get into these moments and then you ask yourself, how did I contribute to the game state? Oh, yeah, okay, that was probably not the best invade since mid had shove, top had move. Okay, probably shouldn't have ganked top there when Lissandra was pinged on top side. Like, and then he might think, well, I have no options. Well, still, there was probably, like you said, a small window elsewhere in the game. But you're going to miss that window because if you make a mistake in the early game,
you have no
windows
anymore.
He actually couldn't afford to make a mistake in that game, unfortunately, because two losing sides.
Yeah.
Maybe top wasn't even losing. Maybe top was only losing because he gave Riven a kill in the early game.
Exactly right.
Who knows, right? So these are all things to think about. I think this was a really interesting little case study.
Yep. Again, going into the another example, the why getting the details is so important, guys.
And if I tried to imagine, if I tried to back like defend myself without getting into the details. Imagine if I said, no, you're just shit, but you kept dying.
Or no, or your only response is, I couldn't roam. Like, you know, you're an idiot, I couldn't roam. It's like, no, you got to show them specifics.
Get into the
And the great thing about it is that we have, the lead engine is great because we have the goddamn replay.
We have the replay. We can just look at it.
So it's not like a, you've got the evidence all here, you know? Yeah. And again, like this player is smart enough. He even realized at the end, like, oh, okay, actually there was nothing. He was angry that there was nothing, but he finally accepted
it. Finally
it's like,
realized
okay,
at the end.
Yeah, this is just a goddamn hard game. So it's not actually, I mean, again, maybe Curtis Vody could have still viewed it, but you know, it's, there's not many options for you that game, buddy.
So I actually got sent this very interesting from an MLS member, Kimmy. She does pottery. She sent me this beautiful little document talking about the similarities between learning League of Legends and pottery.
I love this. We always talk about learning other crafts, yes, other hobbies, how they learning how to learn in these. So I'm excited for this story, Curtis. What's going on here?
And we know nothing.
Zilch.
Zero. Literally zero about pottery. Okay. She said, the basics of the basics. Clay bodies versus league champions. So apparently there's different types of clay. There's porcelain, terracotta, and types of stoneware and earthenware, etc. And each have their own traits. When you engage with pottery, you're ultimately engaging through the clay you have in front of you. So Shivo views the clay as the champion. Knowing what your clay excels at and its limitations are fundamental to making good pots. Also, if you're new to ceramics and the first clay you work with is porcelain, you're going to have a way harder journey, or way harder start compared to someone else who uses a more forgiving stoneware with a little bit of grog, or which is, I'm assuming, ground down fired pots, which adds strength. It's like playing Aurelia instead of playing Annie. You could dive deeper and say that if you fire earthenware to high temperature, it's going to melt. If you play in a mobile mage, she gets into the details here saying some clays are essentially really hard to work with. If you start your journey with porcelain, it's going to be much harder than if you start with these other materials.
Yeah, exact same as League.
Which I found really interesting. And now she says there are several different specialties. Most potters are highly specialized. This is because it's just impossible to learn it all at once. For example, most people are either throwers, which means making pots on the wheel, or hand builders, which means making pots or sculptures by hand using various techniques. This is similar to league roles. Like you have your role and you specialize in your role. I'll talk mostly about wheel throwing because that's the process I use for 95% of my work. Now, newbie potters make a lot of mistakes, especially true if learning to wheel throw, as this is a very muscle memory based, let's say mechanically intensive skill, and it comes down to practice. You can watch the pros and actually get coaching, which is take classes, but at the end of the day, it's about the reps. Here, it's possible to fall into many pitfalls people play league fall into as well. Aiming for finished pots as opposed to aiming for improvement at first, which is a big one. Having a fear of failure and not committing to the learning process. Losing confidence when you sit down at the wheel and just fail over and over again. It's the same things, right? Same themes. Expert potters also make mistakes and have bad days. Sometimes we push the clay too far and it goes flop, crack, smash. Every time that you make one of these mistakes, it can be a learning experience, right? Depending on the way you view it. But everything is building on the basics. There are three basic shapes that are the foundation to literally everything you will ever make on a potter's wheel. Cylinder, bowl, or plate. That's it. And they all share some of the same steps. We start with centering the clay. We open it up. We pull up the walls. We shape. We wire off. We repeat. You could draw some specific parallels, but honestly, this is just the fundamentals. There's the fundamentals of the game that apply to every specialty, regardless of what you do, which is interesting. There's no point going into a pottery class wanting to throw some fancy ass vase when you don't even know how to center. It's never going to happen. So like, again, you can't think of the end result. You got to think of like the steps. Start get the really basics. Good at the basics first. We see that in League. People trying to win a game of League of Legends when they don't even know how to do their jungle clear or track the enemy jungle, right?
Or they're dying for the first two, three times in lane.
That's right. Making pots is all about the process. To get consistent results, our process must also be consistent. We review our work. Ask any wheel thrower how many pots they destroyed by cutting them in half to check for the thickness of the walls when they were learning.
Oh.
When we actually start turning out work, we may review more complicated things and troubleshoot accordingly. Sometimes the answers are simple, but oftentimes there are several places it could have gone wrong. When we're unsure, we ask a mentor at our studios and they see what they think. Next time, we just try to adjust our process accordingly. Pottery is one of the most simple and most complex things, in my opinion. You can teach someone to throw a basic bowl in like 10 hours. Let them dip it in your glaze bucket, fire it for them. It will look like a bowl and hopefully function like a bowl, and they can go have a lot of fun doing that. And you can casually go to a pottery studio once a week for years, but never progress past, well, I just made something that isn't really that nice. Like, you can make a basic ass bowl and it's not really that nice. Anyone can really do that.
Or you can make a beautifully fundamental bowl.
That's right. And you can, it's like just like in League, you can casually play League of Legends with friends for
win
years.
Win games here and there, have some fun winning games, even get fancy scorelines, go 15 and 1 here
casually,
and there.
Randomly. And you're, you can do this for years in League of Legends, playing normal games with friends and barely scratch the surface. Heck, you can play League of Legends for years and find yourself struggling to get out of silver. But the thing about pottery is that you can get into the details as much as you want, and you can deconstruct your process and fine-tune it, improve your workflow, et cetera, et cetera. There are always more that you can try to learn or improve upon. It just depends with how obsessed you are.
Love it.
How insane is that?
We're going to be using pottery as a good analogy for this podcast now, Curtis. We're going to be referring back to that.
And it just shows process applies in many differing mediums and many things out there. And so you can casually do it, make a bowl in 10 hours. Someone can probably play League casually, win a normal game here and there, but there's going to be no consistency and there's going to be no beautiful work being done.
It's going to be a poor quality bowl at the end of it.
That's right.
Yep. Fantastic.
So before we move into summoner school,
yep,
there is one last topic that I want to quickly cover here, which is the FF changes. Okay. So to clarify, I'm going to whip this up here. So basically it's not really set in stone, right? Is it what they
they're testing in normal games for now, and they're thinking about it for ranked.
So what the suggestion was is that they're removing the you need to have 5 votes to FF at 15 minutes. So they want to experiment with playing around with
only
4-1, right? Yep. So like they would be at 20 minutes. Now, Marzion made a really interesting observation. So he said this. The stats don't lie. A staggering 97% loss rate for FFs that are 4-1 at 15 minutes is big. However, we have zero idea why those losses result in the way they do. Is it from the game being so hard to come back from that Riot is poorly designing the game? Or is it because those players are simply mentally checking out? That being said, it might make sense to make 4-1 a new change statistically. But isn't the bigger problem that we're encouraging a community that wants to give up at 15 minutes, if not, you know, 10 minutes into the game? Isn't it far more likely that the high loss rate is because those 4 players are mentally checked out and not because the game is unbalanced? It's interesting, like the message we're sending to the, you know, by if that change were to go through, what message is that spreading? And we don't know, right? We don't know why, right? We can't really prove why that statistic is so high, why so many people are losing games from that point.
And then like the dynamic of the game could just be really, you just start shifting to like pure early game, everything, champs, everything like right. that, right?
And again, think about, the message that is pushing to the wider community.
Yeah.
Guys, games are over at 15 minutes. Well, again, yes, people are making end of review mistakes. People make a shit ton of mistakes, and bounties exist for a reason.
Yeah, bounties. Yeah. Riot have put in so many mechanics to come back at the game these days. You showed me 2 end of review, quote-unquote unwinnable games from you. You know, you're playing Galio, you had like 2 items at like 20-something minutes, and you just made some really creative mid-game plays that won you the game. You just showed me those, and like that's in high challenger game guys. So like, if you can pull that off in high challenger games, I'm sure we can make.
I'm sure people in gold can come back in a game. And this is the thing: how often do you see people perfectly stacking dragons?
Yeah, no.
Right, in lower elo games, no. Sometimes dragons aren't even taken till bloody 20 minutes or whatever.
You know, usually what will happen. Sometimes it works to your disadvantage when you have 3 dragons. Like, you get really cocky, you're overconfident, bam, you guys get aced, you lose that 4th dragon, you get the bounty, bam, it's a snowball effect, and then suddenly the game just snowballs out of control. So, yeah, maybe this change. I think the system's fine at the moment. Maybe it is. I mean, maybe they have a problem with you know, seeing this that stat and thinking,
yeah, people, that is a pretty insane
people
stat.
People hostage, like that one person's the hostage in the game, which, you know, it does happen. But, you know, I think even this last week, I actually was going to finish the game as FFO. I was the fifth person, but I said no, and we actually came back and won that game. And then you in those games, you're like, oh, thank God I didn't FF, yeah. Right? So, yeah, I don't think it's necessary. I personally don't think it's necessary. I think the system's fine currently.
There was an interesting suggestion from another MLA member, which was like, okay, what if they put a double vote in? So let's say you send your vote and then another box comes up. Are you sure you want to FF? Because I think a lot of people emotionally just press
FF. Just press, yeah.
So yeah, they see the thing, they just press yes.
That's a good one. I like that
suggestion. I actually really like that because I think there's many times where people have had a shitty game and they're frustrated. It's, oh, get me out of this game, right?
Especially after everyone's died and the FF comes out. You're in when you're in the death, like the death white screen, the death screen, you're like more inclined to be like, well, I'm not playing the game anyway, so I might as well just move on to the next game.
Yeah, and another suggestion, which I don't necessarily agree with, but I like where he's coming from, is like he's trying to find a way to, get people to think holistically. It's like, are you sure this person has a bounty or something like that? Like it comes up with like a thing or like dragon.
Imagine if it says, are you sure you got to cast it in with Rod of Ages, you know, at 8 minutes, he's going to get level 16.
Or maybe it comes up with a stat, you're only 2K gold down.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how the hell it would do that. Yeah, maybe some advanced AI system would be able to do that. But and I don't necessarily agree with that. No. I wouldn't really want advice. Yeah. But you know, I like that the mindset where that piece of advice is coming from.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, I would be interested to hear your guys' thoughts in the community. Do you think we should have the FFO to 4-1 at 15, or do you think it's fine as it is in your personal experience and in your Elo brackets?
All right, moving on to our Summoner School post for the week. This is a post 3 days ago. This has had 600 upvotes, and the title of this was Want to Climb, Stop Creating, and Spawning Gold for Your Opponent. So this is more of like an advice,
okay?
I think. A simple trick to help you climb. You've seen a lot of recommendations to stop dying and die less in order to climb. Here is why that matters. If you're losing in lane, your opponent has a max capacity of gold they can gain. There are only X amount of minions to farm. This never changes, and Y plates to take. The amount a champ can farm in lane is fixed, and it is the same amount your team members can get. Now, if you start going 0, 1, 0, 2, and 0, 3, each death spawns gold onto the map for your opponent that isn't guaranteeing that your laners will have the same. You having 0 death and 0 CS and only getting experience means your opponent can never be more ahead than your other laners can be in theory. They'll be ahead of you, but not necessarily over the rest of your team. Stop generating gold for your opponent and let yourself be carried. You don't need to be the main protagonist in every game and stop forcing yourself to become the team's antagonist when you're losing lane. So I think this is good general advice. This question is, I've had a lot of reviews this week, and the end takeaway and what I really keep trying to get this message across is that there's so many different ways to get gold in League of Legends than just like Call of Duty is killing people. You know, it's like, for example, when Lissandra Roam bot, your immediate action was to push that mid wave and collect the gold there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, gold doesn't only come through getting kills, right?
And, you know, deaths are so bad, guys, because when you die, you're not getting golden experience.
Where they're getting gold and you're not getting gold.
Gold. Yeah, and also, they're going to be getting objectives and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it's really just really, I wanted to, unless you have anything else on that
one,
Curtis.
I don't know. I just don't resonate with that message. Way that's framed.
Yeah, I agree. I don't like the way it's framed either.
I mean, yeah, okay, there's a lot that... Okay, so he's kind of getting across many things, right? I think he's trying to get across that there's a set amount of gold that they can get. And if you're dying, you're giving them more gold. I don't really understand how that impacts other lanes, but there's that. But then he's also saying you don't need to be the protagonist. You can just minimize if you're in a losing situation and get carried, which are kind of different things, right? Like, I'm assuming what he is assuming here is that someone is dying because they are in a losing situation, and instead of just minimizing and going down 20 CS, they're dying, and then that's resulting in the net gold getting out of control, essentially. Yeah, I mean, those are all valid points. I think there's a lot conflated yeah. in that post.
Because the title of this is "Stop Creating and Spawning Gold for Your Opponent." And again, he's saying right. that when you die, you give plates yeah. and you give gold to the enemy. But, you know, it's not as simple as he said that here. You're having zero death and zero CS and only getting experience. Yeah. You're going to be losing the game that way.
Look, I mean, everyone has their way of getting across the same message. Yeah. I personally think that's a very convoluted way to get it across, and I don't personally resonate with it. But I get it. I kind of get what he's trying to get across.
Hmm.
But yes, minimize. But when it comes to deaths, right? Like we always say, there's a lot of information in a death. You shouldn't automatically assume that when someone is dying, it's a bad death.
Yeah.
Right? You got to die in League of Legends.
Yeah.
Right? There's no way around that. You got to find your limits and you got to make decisions. You got to test and learn. If you're unsure, just do it and die. I literally had a review this morning with Reborn, right? We spoke about in the last episode, and he was an anime, and now he switched to Akali. And he's on 90 games of Akali. I said, great, keep it up. And we did a review, and I said, I love the way you're going. He's just, anything that he's remotely unsure of, he's doing it. If he thinks he can kill, do it. If he thinks he can 1v2, do it. If you want to dive, do it. And he's dying a shit ton. Great. There's only one way to find out. If you're playing an assassin and you don't know your limits, you're useless, right? You have to test your limits. So, yeah, sure, he's dying and he's giving a lot of good spawning gold, theoretically, but he's going to be a better player in the long run because he knows his limits. He knows how much damage he can. Then, we always talk about this, now that he's learned his limits, then we can tone it down and play conservative. There's no point playing conservative, farming to rocket belt, getting into mid game and not even knowing your limits. What's the point? You're useless at that point. You're going to be a shell of an Akali player. I would much rather have an Akali player that's entered 100 games, then plays conservative, then knows their limits, and then comes in and farms conservatively to rocket belt because I know they'll be able to carry in the mid game.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that he's making a lot of assumptions here, and I think we should be careful. We actually need to be careful about this message as well, because telling people not to die can actually hinder.
Make you a worse player.
It can straight up make you a worse player. So that's why you got to die strategically and in purposefully, and then review those deaths and make sure you're making sense of those deaths.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think this is always, you know, this obviously got really heavily upvoted, and, you know, a lot of people know the message of, like, stop dying, die less, but again, I think you get to break it down, and this is just the very general advice.
I mean, I think one of the main reasons people upvote this is because they're thinking, if my mid laner or my jungler just stopped dying, I would have carried them.
Yeah, maybe it's upvoted more so for the fact that they want other people to their teammates to see this to stop dying,
carry,
because they're not the ones that are losing the game.
I don't think people are thinking it in their perspective. No. I think they're thinking, I'm the one playing well and my team keeps dying and ruining my game.
So if I upvote this, everyone else will see it and then they weren't going
to
do that.
Yes, finally, someone's telling my teammates that, you know, and again, it's just that is an assumption. We can't make assumptions like that. But
Curtis, that's pretty
accurate. That's the way I interpret a lot of that.
I interpret that as well.
I don't really get why that's so extremely popular.
Yeah. All right, we're going to move into the clips corner.
Yep, and I had a beautiful segue.
What was your segue, Curtis?
Oh, someone gave me some advice.
They reviewed your segue last time.
Oh, God damn it. I'm going to get roasted again, but yeah, we're just going to get into it. In 3, 2, 1. And welcome, everyone, to Curtis's Clip Corner. Okay, so Clips Corner. I was watching Nemesis's stream VODs casually while I was in queue, since he's quite successful in solo queue, just curious. And I was watching this lane. He was playing Syndra versus Ahri. Now, you know, it's very easy for us to make assumptions about these players and how they're special and they're not in the situations I'm in.
My problems are unique to me.
Yeah, my problems are unique to me. And, you know, these players, they don't get my trash teammates and all that stuff, right? And I'm just going to play this out. And I think it's a really relatable situation for a lot of mid laners out there. A lot of laners, even top, I think everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah.
So So he's getting shoved in by an Ahri. Looks like his jungler's getting invaded. He's got a big wave shoving under his tower. About to crash his tower. He tries to help. Questionable QE. We'll talk about that in a second. Comes back mid because the wave's getting really big.
I'm not roaming.
Says I'm not roaming.
I took my wave mid and it's level 3.
Wave mid's huge. He's got to collect the wave. He's getting spam pinged because he didn't roam here.
The Galio says...
why are we not fighting here? It's free. And then... So Nemesis is getting flamed here for not moving to this play. And you'll see in a second, the team starts spamming him.
And Nemesis says, LMFAO. Pings, huge disagreements going in the chat.
Types in chat, terrible decision. Smiley face. Just chilling. Just trading in mid.
That's not my fault. I'll go over replay after the game and show you how we cannot fight that at all and how it's a stupid play. I've been in scenarios like this 50 times in my life. They're just losing.
So,
God, I just love the reality. This is just such a real...
It's real.
This is solo queue, guys. Welcome to League of Legends.
Welcome, and so this is what I'm saying here, that you don't see this on the highlight clips. You don't see this, and this was on his stream VOD, and I love this because this is the reality we all face, where people disagree on the way something should be played out. So essentially what happened, to really summarize it, his Viego jungle got invaded by the enemy jungler. But Nemesis here was getting kind of slow built on by the Ahri, because Ahri gets a little bit of prior here. I mean... I'm not going to talk about whether that should or shouldn't happen. That's a reality. Ahri was stacking waves into the Syndra. Then what happened is that Viego, he has a top Galio that moved down to this play, and they wanted the fight to happen. So what he actually did, which was really good, which is exactly what I say, do what you can. So he moves over, where he has that brief moment of time before the wave crashes mid, and he tries to help. Now, he tries to disengage here. I mean, it was really nice bait there from the Ahri, so he tries to disengage the play. So what should happen here in reality is the Viego has to actually give. He has to give the camps, except that Syndra has this massive wave under tower and that Syndra can't help. Syndra shouldn't be missing two waves under the tower for this play.
This is not the line. This is not what Syndra wants.
No, this is not. Syndra needs farm.
Yeah.
So Nemesis knows. He knows what he needs. He knows as a Syndra, he can't afford to get behind in farm. So he says, play's not good, and goes back mid.
I'm not roaming.
He says, I'm not roaming. Now, look, I think his pings could have been a bit better quality, but regardless, the team should have been aware of this information and should have known. Now, we got to remember, this is Challenger and EU West. We're talking peak of the European server right now, okay? So then he goes, and then he pings back. The Ahri moves to the play because the Ahri has the priority, and then his jungle... And his jungle and his top die. So the game's like screwed now, essentially. Ahri gets a double kill off this play, and then he gets flamed by his team, essentially. He gets spam pinged, and then he says, you know, I know this situation was bad. I can show it after in the replay, which is very similar to what I said earlier today with me getting into the details. And so you could, if we removed the name tags, we removed all the stream stuff, and you showed me this, you couldn't actually tell what rank this was. Right? This could be plat.
This could be any.
It could
rank.
Be gold. It could be diamond. It could be literally every rank in the entire game. Yep. And you wouldn't be able to tell. Because this is League of Legends. Chaotic situations where people are not aligned. League's a very fast-paced, chaotic game. Maybe his Viego didn't even see the size of the wave mid. I have no idea. Or maybe he prioritizes his camps more than mid-wave. I don't know. There's a lot going on here. And now, this isn't really to show... I don't really want to get into... This is not really to teach you guys about what to do in this situation. It's more about welcome to solo queue and that you're not special and this happens to everyone. Think about it. Nemesis is one of the greatest solo queue players in European solo queue, right? Very, very successful solo queue player. I think he's like top 10 right now in Europe. And he's getting flamed, for not moving to this play.
Yep.
So it doesn't matter how... You're not special. It doesn't matter how who you are. Mm. You're going to get flamed in solo queue and there are going to be disagreements.
It's very easy not to be on the same page. For example, I was playing Elise in a game. I was pathing towards bots, and I was versing Orexi, who I know he was going to counter gank bots, right? It was in that bush. And I had a Yasuo AD carry on my team, and Yasuo likes to play in big waves. And my perception of the play was, okay, I'm just going to full clear, let Rek'Sai waste his time, and my team will just wait for the wave to come back into the tower. But they just started fighting. Even though I pinged it, they just started fighting because, you know, Yasuo players, they want to fight in big waves all the time, right? And then they both got double killed, and they lose a huge wave. And then I just view that as same as Nemesis here. Okay, we just weren't on the same page. End of review, move on for the next game. I didn't overthink it, nothing like that. I definitely was aware that maybe we could have just fought, but it was a pretty big wave. I don't like ganking and fighting in big waves. And, you know, I thought maybe, you know, I reviewed it, maybe I could have gone because I'm playing Elise and Rek'Sai. It's actually a good matchup for Elise. But yeah, you don't overthink those situations sometimes. And I was in, I think Felipe was watching my game, and I said, yep, all good. Like, we're just in different views on about how to play out this situation. Move on to the next game. Nothing more to look at for that.
Yeah, and welcome really, there's welcome to Solo Queue. Nemesis, not much for him to take away from this. I mean, what I would do is maybe double check if I could, why was Ahri getting such a big wave into me? That's the real important information.
You look at like the flow and effects.
Yeah, why was I in this situation in the first place? Yeah. Why was Ahri being able to stack a huge wave under my tower? That'd be like the only thing I take away from this. And maybe could my pings been a little bit better? Mm-hmm. That's about it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time, there are going to be things like this in League that are out of your control. So again, you're not special. This happens in every Elo bracket. Welcome to League of Legends.
Love it. Great example, Curtis. A good reminder here. You know, it's just because, again, guys, don't get angry at this situation. It's just the reality of the game. You know, just you got to move on real quick. It's a skill to develop.
Yeah, I want to really push that. It is a skill, right? A lot of people, when you're new to reviewing and you haven't been in the situation a lot, you're not as experienced, you are prone to over-reviewing.
Yep.
So I think a lot of people would over-review this and maybe send this as a clip and be like, oh my God. But, you know, I think it's worth it. If you're confused, send it as a clip in our Discords, whatever. But yes, this is a skill we need to develop.
Nemesis, look how chill it is. Nemesis even said at the end, he's just chill. I've been in this situation 50 times. I 100% the same. I've been in this situation 50 times. Done it. Bam. Move on. Like, he's ready to move on. And this is what an experienced solo queue player looks like. I mean, I probably wouldn't be typing as much as Nemesis would be here. Like, I wouldn't say maybe it's moving on as quickly as you could.
Terrible decision, smiley face.
But he's very, you know, he's accepted that this is a very common thing in solo queue.
I love it. It's so funny.
All right. We're going to move on to mailbag now, Curtis. Away we go. Song. Alrighty then, first question here is from Dalton. The title of this email is The Perfect Champion. Hey guys, my name is Dalton. I'm currently playing at a gold level and I just joined the Midland Academy a few weeks ago. Since then, I've dropped my longtime main champion, which was Yasuo. Afterwards, I started playing Ahri, but after 30 to 35 games with her, I just didn't have any fun. I also played Fizz for about 30 games, but ran into the same issue. I have since put about 40 games on Kassadin, but the fun is starting to wear off even on him. My question is about whether or not I should keep trying to find the champion that will eventually bring me enough fun and curiosity to play thousands of games with them, or it might be possible that I never find a champion like that.
Great question.
Love it.
Love it. So I think, first things first, there are people out there that are very lucky to find a champion that they fall in love with. And they go through their entire league journey basically being a one trick because they love the champion. There was no thinking about it. They played it. They loved it. They click with it.
I guess it sort of comes to gaming background. Like sort of, you know how we talked before we've had an episode, we talked about your champion sort of like a reflection of your personality or like...
Like mage, like, yeah, like warrior.
Like, you know how we all played like MMOs. Like some of us found what type of style.
I was a mage player.
You're a mage player. Yeah. You love playing Xerath and Ziggs and stuff like that. And you just clicked with that role in those champions really quickly. And I liked being tanky and moving really fast and being unkillable because I was like a healer in MMO. And I liked Udyr as that sort of that style of playing tank junglers that still did damage. So some people don't have that luxury. It's interesting here, Curtis. He's talking about the 30 to 40 game mark. What is usually happening by that point, Curtis?
Yeah, that's the valley of despair.
That's when we're starting to see the flaws of the champion.
Yeah, most people can get, they'll have fun about, you know, first 10 games, honeymoon 20 period, games, 20 yep. games, honeymoon period, then 30, 40, 50, all the way to 60 game mark. That's, you're in the trench, right? You're in the trench there. Like, the honeymoon period is worn off. Start to get into arguments with your champion.
Yeah.
You know, you guys don't talk anymore.
No.
You know, just a lot of conflict coming up. And you got to have a tough conversation, but you got to get into the details there. And you got to nut it out, right? Yeah, you got to just keep playing.
Nut it out, Curtis says. That's his quote from Bruno. Yeah, it's like, just get good, just nut it out.
Yeah, so anyway, yes, that's where you got to get into the details and you got to struggle your way up that hill to the 60-game mark, and then things will start to kind of tend to get better. But like I was saying before, some people are lucky enough, and I'll say they're the minority, to find that one trick. One tricks are the minority. Most people do not find a champion they love and they're not going to be a one trick. Most people are going to kind of just like a wide variety of champions. So as long as you don't hate the champion, you're fine, right? So as long as you somewhat like him, you're all good,
yep.
right? You might be the person that doesn't love any champ. Maybe you just like a bunch of champions. That's kind of where I'm at right now. I actually just like a bunch of champions,
yep.
And that is completely fine. So pick one or two champs that you like and go deep with those.
The title of the email, The Perfect Champion, The Perfect Champion doesn't exist in League of Legends. Everything has flaws. Everything is sometimes hard games to play. I always think about that meme. Like, you know, when it's not even a meme. I've literally been asked this question. It's like, Nathan, I'm trying to find a champion that scales, has strong early game.
Has CC, mobility. Movement speed, dash close, terrain scaling, everything.
That's like a serious question yeah. people ask, right?
Yeah, and, they're not aware.
And it's a huge misunderstanding of how the game works. Like they think these champions, again, they're thinking that's their definition of a perfect champion. But our definition of a perfect champion is a little bit different. Like, I don't know.
I don't really like the word perfect. Is that every champion has strengths and weaknesses.
Clear identity, whether you like identity or not.
Clear identity, that's right. And what is the identity of that champion? Do you resonate with that identity? And ultimately, that's what having a champion pool is all about. You have champions that work in some situations, and you have another champ that works in other situations, which makes you a more well-rounded player. That's the end goal, right? So ideally, the last piece of advice here is that you want to find roughly what you enjoy about the game. Do you like assassins? Do you like mages? Do you like setup and facilitating others? Typically, this ties into more of your personality. Do you like being the carry or the facilitator? What do you like doing? And then kind of go down that route. And then at least you know you're roughly in the area you need to be. And as long as you know that, you can adjust that in the long run, right? And believe it or not, when you get to like the 60 to 70 to 80 game mark, that is when you will start to have fun with your champion, because now you've got the muscle memory, you understand the identity, you understand your matchups a little bit more, you're able to start to get creative and juice the value out of the kit. But it's hard to get there. It's not easy. It's a lot of games.
Yeah, so I would not be looking at that 30, 40 game. It's not a coincidence that you're filling this with Cassidy now. Like, try and push forward and just really... try and just not think about the negatives of the champion. Just play your champion. Just really figure out your champion strengths.
Think of it like this. If I had to win this game, what could I do better? If my life was on the line here and I had to find a way to win this game, what would be the best way to go about it? What are things I could do better here? How could I be more impactful with the plays that I shouldn't have gone for? And that's where talking to other people in the MLA, watching other VODs of that champion, get other people's takes on the champs, ask specific questions, you know, all that. All that beautiful stuff.
All right, our next question here is from someone by the name of Charms. Title of this one is Mental Stack Overload. Hello, last names Curse and Mott. I've got a question for both of you about dealing with an increased mental stack. There is an analogy that I learned a long time ago that I think applies pretty well to League. I used to take drumming lessons when I was a young kid, and whenever I would learn a new technique or start incorporating other drums or cymbals, my fundamentals and tempo would always be off. My teacher told me that drumming was like one of those arcade coin machines where there is an entire table covered in coins, and each new skill you learn is like adding a new coin onto the table. You can always put another coin on, but the difficult part is trying to make sure that none of the other coins fall off in the process. Basically, during my recent climb through Platinum, I found that I had more than enough champion mastery or a large enough table to practice the fundamentals and focus on the game without feeling like any of the skills or coins, using the analogy, were falling off the table. Recently, however, I began to notice that this is no longer the case for me in Diamond 3. While my table seems to remain the same size, it feels like every skill I had once mastered now has more nuance to it, a deeper layer that I never unveiled before. It feels like the pennies that were once on the table have turned to nickels and quarters, grown larger, taken up more space on the table, and are now starting to fall off. I know this because I'm feeling way more stress in my games. My mental stack frequently feels overwhelmed, and the critical mistakes I make are always quite simple from a fundamental perspective when I look at them during review. So my question for you is, how can I go about increasing the capacity of my mental stack as efficiently as possible? Should I focus on developing more champ mastery? Should I begin to set learning objectives for the things I felt I was recently doing so well? Should I stop trying to learn new things altogether? Do I simply need to wait for my brain to catch up? Would love to hear you guys' thoughts. What you guys have to say about this, and always keep up the great work. I'll be around for episode 710 years from now because someone's got to carry the boats and the logs. Stay hard, Charms.
Don't worry, I'm hard.
Yes.
We're hard.
Hard and nutting all the time, Curtis. Yep. This episode out of control.
So I love this question. I want to get very specific as to why those pennies turned into dollars.
I have a pretty clear explanation for this as well.
Go.
The simple explanation is that the higher elo you go, the faster the game pace. You get punished more for the mistakes. So more things are thrown at you. So then you're going to be overwhelmed by mental stack. Let's say, for example, like, you know, let's say if you were to go into a normal game right now, right? The game's going to be like really sort of slow paced. Everything you sort of see come in, but the higher elo you go, that's essentially as simple as it. The higher elo you go, faster the game pace, more stuff in your mental stack.
That's one aspect. 110%, you're spot on. The second aspect in relation to mid is that the matchups evolve. So let's say, for example, you nailed the Cassio versus Victor matchup. Victors will now say you nailed it at P1 and P2. In D3, they're going to be playing slightly different. The Victors may be a little bit better at tethering. Maybe they're more aware of their wave management. Maybe they have better quality resets. Maybe you weren't getting punished for not taking TP, but now you are getting punished for not taking TP. You get the point. So as you get better, not only is the game pace faster, but the laners are better. They're better mechanically. They have better quality fundamentals. They have better micro, whatever, better matchup understanding overall. So doing the same things occupies more of your mental stack because you're having to relearn the basics. This is why we talk about cycling through the same learning objectives. As you get higher, what you've learned goes out of date a lot of the time. It expires. You need to upgrade everything, right? So now we've got to go back to our matchup understanding. We've got to go back to our, you know, our reset sometimes.
I guess the analogy is like you've got milk, you like used it for like a bit and then it expires and then you have to buy new milk.
Yeah, we've got to upgrade the milk.
Upgrade the milk.
The skinny milk is not cutting it. We need high fat, juicy milk. Right? And so it's so that's why we keep going around and around and around.
Yeah. It's still milk at the end of the day.
Still milk. Yeah. And it just tastes a little different, a little better, just a little bit better. So that's why. And so in terms of what the solution is go back over. And I love what he said there, how the mistakes feel basic and the things he's struggling with. But yes, you're spotted. That's what we say time and time and time again. There's no such thing as a complex mistake. All the mistakes are basic. Right? It's the execution of it that gets more and more difficult. That's why when in my reviews and I stream my games, I'm just making basic mistakes all the time. But from the outside, people don't know what it feels like to play versus this player and be in this situation.
That's right.
They don't know what it feels like.
They're forcing you to make the basic mistakes.
That's right. They're tethering perfectly. They're getting in my face. They're forcing me to move back. They're contesting every CS. The junglers are more active and I know they want me in this situation. So I'm having to think about more. My mental stack is more and more occupied, right? So what I'm doing isn't complex, but it's just requiring more of my mental stack. So welcome to League of Legends Charms. And yes, what you got to do is go back to the basics. Go back to the first 8 minutes. Make sure your matchup understanding is good. Put yourself in the same situations over and over again. Don't overcomplicate the reviews. Make sure your fundamentals are sound. People think that once they get the fundamentals, they get it forever. No. Nope. You got to go back over the fundamentals because, again, it's harder to execute on it.
How many times have you had to revisit jungle tracking across this podcast in the last couple of years, Curtis?
I don't even have the mental stack to jungle track right now, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
My mental stack is so overwhelmed right now with my limited amount of games played. I'm just making basic laning errors because, yeah, so like most of my mistakes are pretty basic.
Yep. All right. And our last question for today comes from an anonymous person. Title this email is How to Learn. That's it. How to learn. I'm a 40-year-old father of three kids and have been playing League since Season 7. I'm a network engineer by trade, so my brain is extremely analytical. I'm the type of person that needs to know all of the variables before I approach a subject. I also tend to tilt very easily. I'm someone who can quickly pick things up and excel at them. If I don't excel, I just think that I don't have the skill and drop it. As I'm getting older, I realize that there are things in life that take time to get good at. League is my way of improving at this skill. Plus, I love the game. I'm also heavily involved in my town's esports program as a coach, so I want to not only improve myself as a player, but also improve as a way to help the kids in the program. As a beginner, I quickly hit 30, went to ranked, and got absolutely destroyed. I hit bronze, played a bit for two seasons, then took a break because I had another kid and League wasn't a game I could commit myself to with a newborn. I love the analytical complexity of League, so instead I just consumed content, Twitch, YouTube, Pro Play. I would randomly play games here and there and became what you guys lovingly call a Reddit analyst. This year, I have decided to get more focused on the game. I've placed myself in iron and am okay with that. I've always played 2 to 3 games per session because this is all my schedule allows me, so it was refreshing to hear you guys promote this type of gameplay. I've taken your recommendation to focus my champion down to Aurelion Sol and Talia. My problem is that I find myself way too analytical. I'm starting to learn how to watch my reviews without cringing at myself, but I just see all my mistakes. Also, when learning a new champ, I am that person who has to know all the combos before I play, instead of just learning one or two. But how do I turn off this super analytical brain? What small things should I be looking at in my reviews, as I just tend to write down everything that I did wrong?
Okay, well, first things first, man, I highly suggest you join my program. So I've released, I don't know if you're aware, but I released a below goal program.
The mid-lane school.
Mid-lane school targeted at, you know, beginners, level 30 players all the way to silver 1. Highly recommended. Aurelion Sol is actually a champion we recently added into the program. And I actually really like Aurelion Sol for beginners because it has very simple reference points. It's a, you know, very scaling-oriented champion. It has very clear trading patterns. And is relatively not overly complex to execute. Kind of got Malzahar-esque vibes with its wave clear. And, you know, has a relatively simple laning phase. And you don't get punished as hard for a weak early lane in the lower elo brackets, which makes it actually quite effective. So that's good. Remove Talia. Don't even bother. Very complex champion. Very hard. Don't do it. And with your current schedule, you should only be playing one champion anyway. So that's going to simplify your journey massively. Don't play a second mid champion. Only play Aurelion Sol. So, tying back to what you'd be looking for and how I would approach the situation. I want to use an analogy here. You know, League, like we've been saying a lot, is a feel-oriented game. And what we mean by that is that you need to feel out certain concepts. Like, you need to feel what it's like to get to your item spikes. You need to feel what how much damage you do, how much damage you take, when you feel weak, when you feel strong. You didn't want to, you didn't know how your champion interacts in a wide variety of scenarios. And the analogy or the metaphor I would use here is kind of like, at the end of the day, if you're just starting out of the gym, right, we don't need to worry about super technical form or anything. You just got to do the goddamn exercise to a baseline level. Just lift this thing. Even if the dumbbell curl you're doing is terrible form, it's doing something is better than nothing. And just get started. Get stuck in, right? Fail. Okay, you got to think, but not think. You know what I mean? Like, you got to play with intention. if you're remotely unsure about whether or not you can do something, do it. But it should be in the grand scheme of your learning. So what I mean by that, Aurelian Sol reference points. What are Aurelian Sol's reference points? What does he like to do? He likes to farm and get to his, I mean, it depends what build you go. There's Leandre's build and there's Roller build. Get to your Rod of Ages if you're going Rod of Ages. You know, get your wave clear breakpoints. This is all stuff that's actually covered, by the way, in my program. So again, I highly recommend you join. There's actually, I've got an ASOL main for my main program, right up a beautiful little document talking about baseline reference points, strengths and weaknesses, build, runes, everything. It's all covered there for you. So there's that. So we need to get aligned to what the reference points are. Do a little bit of research as well. If you don't want to join the program, like maybe find some, a guide out there or something that tells you baseline, what the champ's all about. What's his identity? Then start to test around and feel that out. When you're reviewing your games, I would literally just review like first death and then any trade that was really bad. If you take a really bad trade, look at it, observe, move on. From a notes perspective, you don't need to take notes. You're too early for notes. Notes don't matter.
The feel aspect is something that we really need to get into here. The thing that I'm really concerned here, it says he's consumed lots of content.
Mm.
Twitch, YouTube, Pro Play.
Mm.
What are the Twitch and Pro Play, I think, are useless. Really not helpful at all. Because, again, you're not training that feel of it. And this is fueling the analytical side of things. You'll hear, let's say, I don't know who you watch on Twitch, but let's say if you watch some coach or some analyst breaking down the game, it's not really going to be helpful.
Very detached from what you're experiencing. And we've learned that with our own content. That's why we've shifted that the way we do our content.
That's right. He says YouTube here. I don't know what type of YouTube video he's watching. That maybe if he's watching an Aurelian Sol guide, great.
Yeah, watch an Aurelian Sol guide. Or even watch someone play Aurelian Sol. Type in Aurelian Sol, whatever the matchup you played, and just observe. What are their trading patterns? What are they doing? Just look at the ability usage. That's my biggest advice. How are they using their abilities? Why? At a very basic level, why is he doing this? What is he trying to do here with this ability? That is it. That's all you should really be caring about. How is he using his abilities? Ability usage, ability usage, ability usage.
So I guess that Curtis's question here, Mr. Anonymous, is more to answer your question about how do I turn this super analytical brain off? It's really talking about getting the details of the specific champion. As you, the title of this email is How to Learn, the way we recommend new players come into the game, lower level new players, beginners, you need to just get into the weeds of one champion. You learn the game through a champion first.
Yes, and what we've learned, and with our new programs, I've learned the Sol 2 Academy and the Midlane School, is that, so this is kind of one of my new findings, thanks to the help of my mentors, champion mastery and champion specifics actually come before fundamentals. You shouldn't even think about wave management, resets, jungle tracking, warding, threat assessment, roaming, throw all that out the window, okay? Literally throw it out the window, metaphorically, and then think about champion. How do I trade? What does a good trade look like with my champion? When is my champ strong? How do I cast my ultimate properly? How do I do damage? How do I do damage and not take damage? Even though it sounds a bit basic, there's a lot in there. There's a lot about your ability usage and what your champion tries to do.
I like when you said that you got to throw that stuff out the window. Remember that conversation with Gamerdad? And he said that the first thing that he searched up was not about his champion. It was about, he wanted us, he was really, it's like, oh, I want you guys to watch fundamental guides and how to play the role and that sort of stuff. And again, that's what the analytical
brain
would want to do. But this is, again, it's the huge misunderstanding. You got to learn the game through a champion. That's how we did it. That's how you and I did
it. Yep, that's how we did it. That's how
we
did it,
right? Yep. We were just one tricks, hardcore, learned how to
play. How do I hit my skill shots on Xerath?
And then we learned the game holistically as we climb up the ladder. And then we have to.
And that's what we've realized. And so, yes, fundamentals are very important. That comes secondary. What we've learned, and I think we've fucked up in the past as coaches by probably sending the wrong message there. And I didn't know. Now that getting into the details with these below goal clients and as a true beginner is what they should be thinking about, champ mastery is number one.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yes, everything related to ability usage. And how do I do damage?
Yep,
like literally, even if it sounds basic, how do I do damage?
That's what my all my approved champions in the Soul Academy is all about, doing damage, winning fights, because that's step number one.
That's right, that's step number one.
If you can't win fights in League of Legends, you actually can't consistently climb or win.
If you don't know how to do damage and stay alive, then it doesn't matter. And then the what that rabbit hole will lead you down is like, okay, I've noticing how these other Aurelian Soul people are using their E and their Q. I'm going to try that. How does that feel? Interesting. Oh, that actually felt kind of good. I actually did a lot of damage there. Okay, how does he use his ultimate? Oh, he actually hovers around the side and then uses ult from a distance. Oh, okay, I'm going to try that. You start to just pick and choose, play around with this stuff, feel it out yourself. What feels good? What doesn't feel good? And then once you've got your 60 games of Aurelian Soul under your belt, this is where we can start to learn the fundamentals. We can look at your wave management, your resets, and all that good stuff. That stuff comes later, though.
Yep. So, yeah, this is sort of demonstrating the difficulty of navigating how to learn the game through just the content out there. Because he doesn't really know what to focus on first. It's confusing.
And I don't blame him. It's so hard for a beginner nowadays. So overwhelming. There's so much shit and content. Even a lot of my content nowadays, looking back, is... makes me want to puke, right? So, like, we've had to learn the hard way, and just because the game is so unsophisticated, it hasn't been around for that long. We were elitist coaches, only coaching high elo. We didn't know jack shit about the beginners, and now starting to get into it, we realize, okay, we really didn't know a lot about the coaching.
I think a lot of people, let's say if you're a platinum or diamond and stuff listening to this, you're saying, we're telling him to, like, focus on winning fights. People don't realize the muscle memory and everything that you guys as players, the new players of the game, fighting is a huge problem. It's like the biggest problem. And doing just learning how to do damage and knowing when to go in a threat assessment. You guys, we all take that for granted, high elo players. We don't understand that's a huge part of learning the game.
That's right. You are going to learn the game through the lens of Aurelian Soul.
That's right. Step one.
That is step number one.
All right, so that's a great question to wrap up, how to learn. But we're always about learning here, Curtis.
Yep.
We learnt about the BBC pyramid today.
Yep, the pyramid scheme. BBC pyramid scheme.
That's what we'll title it, I guess. That's the title of this episode. Everything you need to know about the BBC pyramid scheme.
That's correct.
BBC pyramid scheme exposed.
Exposed. We just got exposed. We exposed ourselves today.
We did. We broke it down. The four stages of exposure.
Yep.
Good work, guys. Let's keep on improving, and we'll see you next time.